Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Katayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from our studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli and supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. And my guest today is Makoto Suzuki, the chef owner of many popular Japanese restaurants in Brooklyn, including Bozu Samurai Mama, Brooklyn Bowl Factory. And Makoto came to New York to become an actor and somehow became one of the most successful restaurateurs in New York City. So today we'll talk about Makoto's interesting career path, challenges he faced when he opened the first restaurant in Williamsburg 13 years ago, his key to success as restaurateur, and much, much more. But quickly before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network website as well as iTunes and Stitcher as podcasts. Please go to iTunes and Stitcher and subscribe to Japanese. Also, if you have any ideas about topics of the show or show guests, please let us know, and you can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org. Now let's start the conversation with Makoto Suzuki. Hello, Makoto. Welcome to Japanese.
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa.
English.
Okay, so you opened your first restaurant, Bozu, in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, in 2004. So how many restaurants and what kind of restaurants do you have?
Currently, I have six full-service restaurants and two cafes.
Are we going to talk about Bozu specifically a little later? But what else do you have? You have Samurai Mama is a udon restaurant.
Homemade udon noodle restaurant, izakaya. And also Samurai Papa is a homemade ramen noodle. I have two Samurai Papas. One is ramen and sushi. Another one is ramen and soba, teuchi soba.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Momo Sushi Shack.
Okay.
It's kind of fusion. And also Brooklyn Bowl Factory. It's a cafe and a meatball bento box and pastry.
And I heard it's a very serious cafe, and it's the home roasted coffee beans that you serve.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I heard Samurai Mama is a Michelin Guide recommended restaurant.
Sorry?
Yeah, Michelin. 2017 Michelin Guide. I think it's recommended Samurai Mama.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I think it's Bose, no?
I think it was Samurai Mama.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, or maybe Bose too. Yeah, I have to check. Yeah. Wow. But anyways, congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much.
So when and why did you come to New York?
I came to New York 1992, the first time as an actor, as a member of a theater troupe. We performed in the Lee Strasberg Institute for 1 week. And And, you know, I was really impressed by the audience because New Yorker is a very free, you know. If it were in Japan, the audience is very quiet and then they're checking each other if it's good timing to laugh or not.
Oh, wow. Like,
very conservative, right? Mm. So I believed maybe this audience grow the artist. Mm. So I wanted to come back to New York to study acting. So when I went back to Japan, I talked to my agent and then so gave me 6 months vacation.
Mm.
And the 6 months became 23 years. And I never dreamed about having a restaurant myself.
Mm, that sounds very classic New York story. Hey. What kind of acting career? You said it's theater?
Yeah, mostly theater. Mm. I have only two movies, but the last one was really memorable. I worked with Akira Kurosawa.
Mm.
I was his very last movie called Madadayo.
Mm.
And then if you see this movie, the opening is a title, Madadayo.
Mm.
Then next you see a close-up of the classroom door.
Okay.
Then one student comes in and say one word, Kita, kita! That's me.
That's you.
But that's it.
But it was the beginning.
Yeah.
Right? Very important.
Yeah, very important.
So it's Mother Day. I have to look up the movie.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So so how did you get into cooking?
Well, I don't know. If I remember, I think when I was a kid, I already started doing something in the kitchen. I was always hungry, and my parents are busy. My mother is busy, so I couldn't wait for the dinner. So I was cooking by myself.
Mm.
And I remember when I was 4 or 5 years old, only banana was there, right? And then somehow I wanted to cut the banana, cut into half, and then stand the top.
Like a vertically.
Yes,
stand.
And then try to cut vertically, and then slip, and they cut my finger.
Oh wow!
And a lot of blood came out. And
oh my god!
And then mother came and what happened? Like that was my kind of first experience using knife.
Wow!
And,
but you never got scared.
Yeah.
Right, and kept cooking.
Yes.
Right.
And then, when I went to Tokyo to start. Theater. Always we're poor, always hungry.
Right.
So we always get together in somebody's apartment, mostly in my apartment, and then I cooked for everybody.
Mm.
Yeah, 3 times, 4 times a week.
Right.
It's cheaper, right?
And
then, well, yeah.
Right, but it's upside. I know we've known each other for years, and I think you like the entertainment. Part you to entertain other people. I think you.
Oh, right. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, but then, you know, in New York, you professionally started to cook, right?
Well, not really. First, I started as a waiter, and I got fired 4 times in the first 6 months.
What did you do?
Well, I was a dumb waiter, and also I really hate the chef and managers, everybody at the time, 23 years ago. They looked like alien-like.
Mm. So you're at Japanese restaurants?
Yes. I couldn't believe they're Japanese. Anyway, so maybe I was young.
Maybe so, you're too honest.
Yes. And then 5 years after I came to New York, I need to obtain a green card to stay legally. And one of the restaurant owners, Mr. Kodama, kindly he offered me to be my sponsorship for the green card. So I was so happy, but, you know, I have to know later, I have to work like a slave. Literally, I worked 14 hours a day, 6-7 days. And I thought maybe I can get the green card in a year and a half or 2 years. That's what my lawyer said. And I was planning to go back to the theater right after the green card.
Mm.
But
oh, you had to give up a while.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I was in a role in the studio. It's called Terry Schreiber Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a role, but I had to cancel.
Wow.
Because, yeah, I had no choice.
Right. So without the visa situation, you could have been very successful.
No. Even I passed the audition, no green card, no union,
right.
Out.
Wow.
So, and also, you know, I had to stay legally. And that was the only choice for me at the time.
Right.
And, oh, actually, I transferred my credit from Japan to Hunter College. And then I was ready to pay the tuition and then continue the student visa. But the tuition was double than I expected. I was seeing the, you know, residential tuition. Right. Alien is double. So I gave up the students.
Right.
So no choice. I had to go to into the restaurant. And I worked as a manager, assistant manager.
Right.
And my first salary was $60 a day.
Wow.
And maybe half of the waiters. Anyway, and yes, but I really worked hard because, you know, I didn't want to waste time.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but then, you know, you got the visa.
Yes.
And you didn't go back to acting.
Well, 6 years after, I became 41. And first time I became realistic. Wait a minute. With my age, I had to go back to part-time job and then go to the audition.
Right.
And go back to poor again. You know. first time I became very realistic in my life. Then, maybe I'd better start my business. That's what I thought.
Right.
Because my goal is very, very low. When I got the green card, I was 41. My salary was $120 a day only. So I thought maybe if I open my restaurant, if I choose a very cheap rent and work only by myself, I thought maybe I could make at least $120 a day income.
Right.
So, and then after 6 months, maybe I can hire somebody, then maybe I thought I could go back to the theater.
So that sounds like you didn't go back to theater, but it sounds like you made the right decision.
Charity is much harder. No way. I worked all day long from morning till midnight, 7 days, 365 days, first year and a half. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, and then you opened Boze in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, 2004.
Yes.
And it sounds like you chose a place where the rent is cheap, as you did.
Yes.
But how was Williamsburg back then?
Oh, my God. When I opened Boze restaurant, 2003, I started construction, right? Yes. At the time, no business at all on the Grand Street.
Wow.
All the gate is closed. A lot of griefy.
Right.
Drug dealers on the street.
Gunfires.
Yeah, gunfires. Helicopters. Wow. Screaming. And I was really scared even go shopping around the corner.
Wow.
And when I opened my restaurant, my friend came and then the first thing they say, "Oh, I was scared. Why did you open such a place?"
Right. Yes. But you had a kind of intuition that it's going to be okay in
no.
the environment.
No. No, nothing. I didn't think about anything. Just you know, I still believe I could make $110.
Right. So that was a very solid.
Yes. But you know what? The first day, board sales was $86.
Wow.
And I paid to the one kitchen assistant and then one waitress
Right.
Nothing. Oh, even wow. not enough.
Right.
Right.
But so there is nothing else in that area. So no, I think you really did the right thing.
I don't know.
Mm. So what is the biggest challenge in opening, you know, the restaurant?
The biggest challenge?
Right. I mean, that time, and probably, you know, Japanese food was not as popular as now.
No.
And
people knew only sushi and tempura.
Mm.
Right. The big challenge? I decided two things. I don't hire a sushi chef.
Mm.
Because, as I said, I had many hard time, you know, treating those chef and managers 23 years ago.
Mm.
And at the time, chef was so bad.
Oh, okay.
Right, you know.
Mm.
And then, so...
some people say that, you know, people who couldn't do work in Japan came here,
right,
something like
right,
that, right?
Right, right, yes. So I decided not hiring a sushi chef and also not carrying gari, the ginger, mm. on
oh,
the
okay.
side of sushi.
Pickled ginger.
Yes. And then...
Why is that?
What?
Why not?
Well, because... well, first of all, we are not a sushi restaurant.
Mm.
A tapas bar.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
So Japanese-style tapas
Japanese bar? Japanese-style tapas bar. That's what I meant both to be. And sushi is only one recipe, one menus.
Mm.
And that's why I created Bomb. Bomb sushi, you know, round shape.
Okay, so the bomb sushi is basically sushi, and the shape is like a bomb.
Bomb,
like,
well, round. Round shape.
Okay.
Yeah, and the toppings on it, mm-hmm. decorated. And it's still, it's our significant. 50% of the restaurant sales are bombs.
Mm, okay.
Yes.
Wow.
Brooklyn, maybe I'm going to rename the bowls. Brooklyn, Bomb Bombers.
Mm, okay. So, but, you know, what's the difference between, you know, the nigiri is a regular sushi, but...
Yes. Well, the difference is just a shape.
Mm-hmm.
And also, each piece has a decoration on it, toppings.
Oh, so instead of just a regular nigiri, it's more
yeah.
decorative and beautiful.
Right.
Mm.
Yes.
Right. And... also, I heard, I think I tried it once and it was amazing. And you have, it's not dipping in soy sauce, but you have special three types of sauce and then just
right.
pour over it.
Yes. Well, sushi, when you eat sushi, you have to put soy sauce on the fish, not the rice.
Mm, that's a
okay.
classic.
This is
learning.
Classic, but very important. If you put soy sauce on the rice, your tongue, touch the soy sauce first.
Mm.
You taste only soy sauce. But when you put soy sauce on the fish side,
mm-hmm.
and then first you eat right, well, actually soy sauce and then fishiness goes very, it's a good matching.
Mm.
Soy sauce overwhelm fishiness.
Right.
That's why, you know, fish tastes good.
Mm.
Fish and soy sauce always a matching,
mm.
not for the rice. And
right.
the fish and soy sauce mixture mixed with sushi rice in your mouth.
Mm.
This is a harmony.
Right.
Yeah.
And the rice is more absorbent, so you get the extra soy and then kind of overwhelms the vinegar in
yeah.
soy,
yeah.
The rice.
Right.
So the fishiness just stands out.
Yes. So when we eat sushi with chopsticks, we flip over the sushi on the side,
mm.
then grab, and then put soy sauce on the fish side. But it's really difficult,
right.
I think.
Even for Japanese
yeah,
people.
Even for Japanese
and
people.
And you splash soy sauce.
Yes. So I thought maybe I wanted my customer pour soy sauce from on the tops.
Mm.
And also, I always see the American customers... mess up the table with soy sauce a lot,
mm.
right? Put dipping the soy sauce
right.
in the small soy sauce dishes.
Mm.
I didn't want that.
Mm.
So So I encourage customers to pour soy sauce on it. So that's why I had to prepare the already wasabi mixed soy sauce.
Okay.
That's the idea. Mm. So three. One is non-wasabi. Mm. And then a little wasabi. A lot of wasabi.
Okay.
I say crazy spicy. Mm. And then the customer is supposed to pour on it.
Mm. And so it's more elegant and you can control.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
Right. Okay. So, well, but I heard also that when you opened Bozu, you couldn't have a liquor license.
Oh, right, right, right. I meant Bozu as a bar. Mm. But no liquor license. And then, yes, I think that was a New York Post or Daily News. I don't remember. They came for interviews and they tasted the food and then they like it. Mm. And then in the interview, the last thing she asked me was, how is the business? And then, well, you know, we had a bar. Bar with a liquor license is like a striptease with a dancers, I said. Then she exactly wrote what I said on the paper.
So as a result, a lot of people came too.
Oh, right, 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 yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was crazy. So...
Oh, one more thing. Mm. Very interesting story. Oh, one of the waitresses was working in the bar, and then one customer came in. Mm. And then he asked what kind of restaurant. And she said tapas bar. And then he was like, really? And then once went outside and then came back with his friend. And then, hey, where is the dancer? Where's the topless? What? He said topless. No, tapas bar. What?
That really shows how Williamsburg was like back then, right?
I was hesitant Jewish.
Grand Street Street Bar was the time.
Well, anyway.
Right. So, well, that was a rough environment.
Yeah.
And so, sounds like you can get a liquor license at the beginning and as crazy customers came. So that really sounds like you had challenges.
Yeah.
So now you have... you know, it's really interesting concept, right? The Bozu is now a restaurant.
Mm. Right? Yes.
Right? And after Bozu became popular, you opened different kinds of restaurants, including udon, soba, sushi, ramen, and cafe. Mm. So why did you choose those categories of Japanese food for your restaurants?
I always wanted to do udon noodle.
Mm.
Because noodle is for any people, for Japanese, for American people. I think American people, when they are college students, when they get hungry, the only thing they can eat by themselves is a spaghetti or a cup noodle, right?
Mm.
So I thought maybe noodle is more like a nostalgic soul food.
Mm.
And then that's true in Japan. Udon noodle is, even ramen.
Right.
And the reason why I picked ramen, I know, udon first, was udon is more flexible. Ramen and soba, you must eat right after cooked.
Mm.
After 10 minutes, nasty.
Right.
But udon noodle, right after cooked, fresh one, crispy, tastes good. After 30 minutes, get a little bit softer and then salty.
Mm.
It tastes good.
Interesting.
And then cook in a broth, and the noodle absorbs soup.
Mm.
Swallow.
Right.
Still tasty.
Mm.
Udon noodle is perfect. Very flexible.
Interesting. Yeah, I've never thought of that because it's thicker.
Yeah.
And more gluten. So that's why it stays.
Maybe, I don't know. Right. And also, my wife is a crazy for udon noodle. When we dated, what do you want to eat? Udon noodle. Oh, okay, next day. What do you want to eat? Udon noodle. Every time, udon noodle. Okay, like, and then she went to Shikoku to study udon by herself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The Sanuki style udon.
Well, that school was Sanuki style, but our Samurai Mama is not Sanuki style. This is very important, okay?
Okay.
Yes. People misunderstanding. Udon must be Sanuki style. No way.
Mm.
That's only one type.
Okay.
Okay. But anyway, I'll talk about that bit later. But anyway, then we decided to udon noodle restaurant. Mm,
that's a very deeply personal.
Yeah. And then all the broth and noodle, my wife made a recipe.
Okay. Right. And I asked those questions, you know, category-wise, because you are, I think, is a pioneer in Brooklyn to educate people with Japanese cuisine. And you didn't just stick with that, you know, one category like sushi and make other branches to make money. You do really try to introduce new categories of new food of Japanese cuisine. So, yeah, this, do you feel like, next one is ramen, next one is soba, next one is cafe, that kind of thing? Or why did you decide to expand?
I don't know. It just happened.
Because you wanted to eat it by yourself?
I don't know. Like I don't know. But the one thing in common they have in common is casual, right? Not high end.
Right. Fun place to be.
Yeah. I don't like the luxury about food.
Yeah, whenever I go into a restaurant, it's almost like there is a little festival going on. It's always some energy. So
yeah.
Maybe that's what it is. All right. So you have been in the U.S. for over 20 years and running Japanese restaurants for 13 years now. So how do you describe the change in people's knowledge and the palate for Japanese food?
Oh, it's a big difference. Used to be people knew only sushi and tempura, sukiyaki, teriyaki,
right.
Yakitori. But now they even know kimpira. They know the words kimono, umeboshi, yuzu. Yeah, it's a big difference.
Right.
Yes, and even sake, they used to drink only boiling hot sake. They believe sake must be boiling hot. I remember when I was working as a manager in the city, one American customer ordered one bowl of sake, like carafe. He asked two cups. Oh, I have a company? Do you have a company? No, by myself. Why you need two cups? He used one cup as a lid.
Wow.
To keep warm.
It's unthinkable. Wow.
But now, you know, they are very educated. Good sake can be a drink with chill or room temperature.
Right.
And then human body temperature. Each sake has a best temperature.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it's like never boiling hot.
Because I heard that the sake at that time was really cheap, that you have to get the flavor out by boiling
it. Yes. If you boil all expensive sake and the cheap sake, it tastes the same.
Right.
Yes. So please don't boil.
Right. So go to your place and then learn how to drink bubbles.
We have a thermometer. When we serve warm sake, we stick the thermometer, stand thermometer for the customer.
Right.
And then wait until it goes up to 130 degrees. Not more than that.
Right.
Like.
Oh, wow, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe you should have it. Like every house has it for a hot sake. Right. Okay. So let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about why all of Makoto's restaurants stay successful for years. So please stay with us.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies.
Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's unique store in Lower Manhattan is home to perhaps the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan, plus the rarest natural sharpening stones and exquisitely designed tableware. They also host special events such as knife sharpening demonstrations and parties with New York's most famous chefs and restaurateurs. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the implicit and elegance of Japanese culture to your table, be it in your home or in the finest restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcast live from our studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Katema, and my guest today is Makoto Suzuki, the chef owner of multiple popular Japanese restaurants in Brooklyn, and including Bozu, Samurai Mama, Samurai Papa, and Brooklyn Bowl Factory. So, he's a funny man. So, I know that you try to make everything by hand as much as you can, and they use quality ingredients. For instance, your noodles are handmade, salmon is wild-caught, and coffee beans are house-roasted and use uniquely filtered chemical-free water called kaikisui. So, what is your philosophy of cooking?
My philosophy is safe ingredients and nutritious, and then also I really hate wasting food. And this is my philosophy of cooking. When I was single and then college students and midnight, I'm hungry. And at the time, there's no convenience store. At midnight, there's no place I can get any food, and I have my refrigerator, only a shrink potato, and the chicken wing, and some daikon or whatever, and then you know, I didn't want to eat them just as easy, right? But then. Start thinking, what should I do? What should I do? What can I do? Like, then I grated potato and put water and let it sit. If you wait for maybe an hour, you get the starch in the bottom, right? I knew it. I learned when I was elementary student, right? And then also I take off the meat from the chicken wing and then crack the bone. And then boil the bone, and then other shrink vegetable, everything. Boil, and then put some soy sauce, and then finally, after an hour and a half, take this out, this starch, and then make it nothing that get toromi.
Sticky. For the starch,
yes, and then eat. It tastes good, right? Use a you know, creativity here, because I'm hungry. I have a limited ingredients. That's the power of the cooking, I think. I don't want, I want to cook this, but I need this. Unless I have this ingredients, I cannot cook this one. No. Cook anything what you have. And that's why, you know, I always buy, when I open Bose, I shop around the distance. I can go by bicycle. Only, you know, in that area. Doesn't have to be very, you know, good material. As long as it's fresh. And at the time, 14 years ago, 13 years ago, there's not many organic. And organic is way too expensive, so I didn't buy. But you know, as long as it's fresh. And then in that area, it's a kind of Hispanic area. So there are many interesting ingredients we never use for Japanese cooking. Many different yams and, you know, many. So I use them for my cooking, but the touch is always Japanese. Using, you know, non-Japanese material, use a Japanese technique, and then using the Japanese ingredients, add the Western technique. This is what I did for both because it's a fusion. So,
and it becomes more approachable. And also you utilize seasonal, local,
fresh
vegetables and other produce.
Right.
So that makes sense. I think Japanese essence of cooking is also local, seasonal, and it's a mottainai. You don't waste
mottainai,
anything.
Yeah.
Right. So that's like, you know, the invention that comes out of necessity.
Yes. And then when I was cooking, making a new menu, and then my employees in the kitchen asked, Makoto-san, why use this material? And I said, because this is here. I imitated, you know, some famous climber. Why do you climb? Because the mountain is here.
That's so profound.
So something like, and he laughed, because this is here. I'm serious, you know. I want to use something I have now.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to go to Whole Foods and spend like $100 of everything necessary.
No.
It can be.
If the refrigerator is empty, I go Whole Foods. But as long as you have something in the refrigerator, you have to use that one first.
Right. That's the chicken wing example. So it's like a slow cook, if you name it differently.
Right.
So, And I heard that at least 6% of restaurants are closed within 3 years from opening in New York. Or even sooner, I think. But why do you think your restaurants can stay popular for such a long time?
I don't know. I want to ask to the customers. I really appreciate, you know, they keep coming in. I don't know. I really want to know. I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know. It's a miracle. I'm always lucky. I think I'm lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think I have an impression that you treat your staff people, both floor and kitchen, like family members.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
So maybe I'm guessing that's a big reason too.
Could be. Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. I would say the new person. Okay, our restaurant's concept is like as if you are throwing your home party, your host. And then we are host, everybody. And then, actually, at the home party, you never say, oh, this is not my job. This is your job. This is not my job. No. At the home party, it's like entertaining each other and enjoying.
Be yourself too.
Yeah, hosting and the people, the guests together, enjoying. This is a home party. So suppose we are home party, like, you know. So, of course, you know, at the restaurant, guests paid money. But still, like a home party. Enjoy together. And then each other, employ each other, cooperate each other. While labor department might say, oh, job description, but hey, forget about it. We are team.
Nice.
Yes. And always I say the managers, the manager's job, kitchen guys, okay, there's a garbage in between kitchen and hall. If they say, oh, this is belongs to the kitchen, the hall guy say, oh, this belongs, oh, kitchen guy says it's a hall, the hall guy say, oh, this belongs to the kitchen. Nobody pick up the garbage. Then the manager must do three choices. Two choices, I don't know. To decide who should pick up. Or pick up by yourself. Yeah.
So at your place.
Yes, but ideally, you know, ideally, kitchen guy tried to pick up, and the whole guy said, "Oh, don't worry, this is mine. Oh no, don't worry. Like, you know, this is the best situation." Yes.
So I think that's what you're creating.
You know what? If only one restaurant was running, it was, I think, the best. That was the best. Mm. But the more I have more restaurants, and then a little bit, you know, this atmosphere is a little bit going down. That's what I realized. I feel kind of crisis now. So now...
You mean the energy of the place?
Yes. So this year's resolution, I go back to the restaurant hall, kitchen, more often, at least 5 days a week. Yeah.
But you yes. have 7-8 restaurants.
Yes. So.
And, right. But it's really powerful, home party, because I think recently I went to one of the most expensive and supposed to be really good restaurants. The server was so nervous, and it's so trying to practice the... I went there very early of the evening. So server was waiting customers. He was like practicing what to say and, you know, following the manual. I was so miserable. I was so really scared to be fired or something. And it's definitely not a home party.
All right.
So, yeah, you have to have fun.
Well, that's a high-end restaurant. They must do it. It's enjoying the ritual. I mean...
Right.
Yeah, but...
But I also been to high-end restaurants. It's really, they have a home party too. So I think that's really a strong statement to have home party. Yeah. Okay. And by the way, in 2013, you opened a Brooklyn-style eatery in Tokyo called Kitadei Shokudo.
Right.
So what is the concept and why did you open it?
Why I opened the restaurant was the guy, his name is Kitadei. Mm. Actually, he worked for me at Bose as a bartender for 3 years. And then after, when I opened Samurai Mama, I sent him in the kitchen as a chef. He was surprised. Wow, is it okay? But I knew he can do it. And then he was the opening chef, chief chef at Samurai Mama.
Wow.
And then worked for 3 years.
That's totally a substantial career development.
And I sent him to the udon school where my wife went.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And then he worked for me for 6 years, but his wife had a visa issue, so they have to go back to Japan.
Right.
And then he wanted to open his own restaurant, but he's very chicken, and his wife, he has guts. Hey, you have to do it, you have to do it. But he was like, I don't know if I can do it. I have no money. And then, you know, she called me. Okay, don't worry. I want to open the restaurant. I was thinking to open the restaurant in Tokyo, so we'll do it together. And then, wow, mostly I invested, but... And then, you know, yes, that's how we opened the restaurant. And the concept is he wanted to do a homemade tacos.
Mm.
Okay, that's a good idea, very good idea. But only tacos, you can't make business.
Mm.
And the place we picked was in a kind of industrial area. Saturday, Sunday, nobody on the street.
Right. Like, it's in Kanda, like a downtown.
Yeah.
Right, it's a commercial.
Right, yes. Right. Bakuro, Yokoyama.
Right, like a Bowery street for kitchens.
Right. Well, maybe it used to be old-time Winsburg.
Mm.
Yeah. So, no footage very low. So, only tacos can, and it cannot business. You must get the customer from the far. They're using taxi, and you know, they are come. They must, you know.
There's a destination.
Yes, so we have to add more food, and then he tried to make many things, but nothing was really good. So, and then we are opening in 2 days. We already announced, and he started crying. Oh, what should I do? Hey, don't worry, don't cry. I'm like, okay, let's do this. Now you make some Mexican sauce, right? Okay. And also let's make more South American style sauce. Like, you know the Caracas?
Mm-hmm.
They use
Caracas Arepa Bar?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love their garlic spicy mango sauce on the table.
Mm.
Hey, let's make that. But mango is very expensive in Japan.
That's
and
true.
At the time was winter time, so hey, I have a lot of persimmon in my parents' garden.
Mm.
And then I brought a lot of persimmon. And then garlic persimmon and then cayenne pepper. And then we make spicy persimmon's garlic sauce.
Wow, that and sounds then, even fancier.
Yeah, and also I made a yuzu salsa.
Mm.
And also chipotle. I love chipotle sauce. Mm. And then those goes very well with Japanese cuisine. This is what we found in our kitchen in New York. You know, in the kitchen, we have a lot of Mexican guys working. And for comida, employees' food, family food, they use Japanese ingredients, but they bring their own sauce, arrange, and that tastes good, right?
Mm.
So, okay, let's do this. We make some sauces customer can choose, the menu is like a yakizakana, broiled fish with daikon oroshi soy sauce. That's wine, rice and miso soup. But additionally, put on the side.
Right.
And then tell the customer, this is what we do at the restaurant in New York, Brooklyn.
Mm.
And then people like the word Brooklyn.
Right. No, really, Brooklyn is a key word in Japan,
yes.
too. Right?
Then, yeah. What about this? Huh? Make up your mind, huh? Then one people came in from the street and then he asked, oh, what kind of restaurant is this? And then I explained exactly what I said 2 minutes before. And then, oh, really? This is okay. It's like a fusion of Mexican and Japanese? Oh, yes. Oh, nice. Sounds interesting. And he went outside. Okay. Shige. His name is Shige.
Mm.
I already talked to the public. You cannot change. Then now we started out with this concept.
Mm.
And we're doing very good business right now.
Right, I heard. And it's a beautiful setting,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Right. So, listeners, if you're interested, it's called the Kitade Shokudo in downtown Tokyo. And it's in the Kanda area. And Kitade, K-I-T-A-D-E, and Shokudo, it's S-H-O-Q-U-D-O, Kitade Shokudo. All right, so do you still work as an actor?
I performed 2012, a year after the disaster. March 11th, there was one performance.
For the tsunami.
Yes, yes. So we donated all the money from that show, and that was the only performance last 14 years, 13 years.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, you don't have to wait for any disaster. Maybe you can.
No. I'm not waiting for the disaster. But I really wishing to go back to the theater. But if somebody please give me any job, please.
So auditioning.
Yeah, I'm a really good actor, though. Please.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe it. So, are there any similarity between acting and cooking?
Yes. Well, creation, imagination, and amuse people, and I don't know. Communication with ingredients.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like, talk each other. Watching the daikon, okay, like, and then one bite. Oh, okay, like, feel the taste, feeling, like, this is kind of the work with in the theater.
With the audience?
With the audience, with the other actors, with all the circumstances, everything, atmosphere, yes.
Mm, so it's you're responsive to whatever surrounding you.
Yeah, right.
Mm,
I'm helped by all the ingredients. I mean, all the materials, all the thing in the world, you know. come to me and help my imagination and give me the energy.
Right.
So it's very similar to acting.
Right. And also you staff people at the restaurant. The same thing.
Yes.
That's another reason why you were so successful.
And also the same thing, you know, when I performed, one day a customer was very quiet, then they left. Suddenly, when I see that, you know, always very sad, right? Sometimes this happens in a restaurant. I don't know why. We're doing the same cooking and then perform the same way, but sometimes this happens. This kind of things, you know, is really shocking. Yeah, I'm always hard.
Right, but that's life.
Yeah, that's life. That's life.
Right. So now, what's your plan for the future?
I'm thinking to focusing on the Brooklyn Bowl Factory.
And the cafe and...
cafe and bento box. And Brooklyn Bowl Factory, bowl is B-A-L-L, bowl is, means meatball. Because, yes. And I want to bring this store to Japan. This is my dream, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
In a local area. Not Tokyo, not Osaka, not in the big city. Only in a local village.
Like what Williamsburg used to be.
Not more than that. More local area. Like people, young people, everybody went out and only elderly people staying there. Like always dying village. Those kind of village. I want to build the restaurant in the middle of the farmer's field or next to the river or top of the mountain, whatever.
Right. I have a good candidate place.
Oh, really?
It was my past episode, Douglas Diaz. We talked about that kind of place.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So where can we find your restaurant or whatever you're doing and the information about, you know, whoever wants to know more about your restaurant, what you're doing, any website or anything?
Website, yes. Yes. Address?
Yes.
Oh, okay. SamuraiMama.com.
Okay. So, Samurai Mama, it's SamuraiRai. SamuraiRai Mama, MAMA.com.
Yes, and Brooklyn, Brooklyn Bowl Factory, BK Bowl Factory.com.
Okay, so one word, BK Bowl Factory.com.
And Samurai Papa BK.com.
Okay, so SamuraiRai. PAPABK.com.
Yes.
Okay. Great. All right. So please keep us posted and please come back. Thank you for coming.
Oh, thank you very much.
All right. So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for guests or topics of the show, please contact us at japanneeds@heritageradionetwork.org. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, and Stitcher Podcast. And please go to iTunes and Stitcher and write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. And today's show was made possible by Corin, and our engineer is Vitor Hash. And thank you for listening, and I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.